Om Ajnana Timaranta Shya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshuvun Militam Dena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swaparantikam Vandeyaham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sahadvaitam Savadbhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Param Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Brindavanishwari Rishabhanusate Devi Pranamami Haripriye Vanshakaupaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhayivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaurabhaktavrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare So we are going to speak on parampara. What is the importance of parampara? And to do this, we will comment on two verses from Srila Prabhupada's translation of Bhagavad Gita as it is. This is from the fourth chapter, text number one and text number two. So text one. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Imam Vivasvate Jogam Proktavanaham Avyayam Vivasvan Manave Praho Manviksvakave Bravit. Translation. The Blessed Lord said, I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god, Vivasvan, and Vivasvan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshvaku. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Herein, we find the history of the Bhagavad Gita traced from a remote time when it was delivered to the royal order, the kings of all planets. This science is especially meant for the protection of the inhabitants, and therefore the royal order should understand it in order to be able to rule the citizens and protect them from material bondage to last. Human life is meant for cultivation of spiritual knowledge in eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the executive heads of all states and all planets are obliged to impart this lesson to the citizens by education, culture, and devotion. In other words, the executive heads of all states are intended to spread the science of Krishna consciousness so that the people may take advantage of this great science and pursue a successful path, utilizing the opportunity of the human form of life. In this millennium, the sun god is known as Vivasvan, the king of the sun, which is the origin of all planets within the solar system. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated, Let me worship Lord Brahma, said the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, Krishna, who is the original person and under whose order the sun, which is the king of all planets, is assuming immense power and heat. The sun represents the eye of the Lord, and traverses its orbit in obedience to his order. The sun is the king of the planets, and the sun god, at present of the name Vivasvan, rules the sun planet, which is controlling all other planets by supplying heat and light. He is rotating under the order of Krishna, and Lord Krishna originally made Vivasvan his first disciple to understand the science of Bhagavad Gita. The Gita is not therefore a speculative treatise for the insignificant mundane scholar, but is a standard book of knowledge coming down from time immemorial. In the Mahabharata, Shanti Parva, we can trace out the history of the Gita as follows. In the beginning of the Treta Yuga millennium, this science of the relationship with the Supreme was delivered by Vivasvan to Manu. Manu, being the father of mankind, gave it to his son, Maharaj Ikshvaku, the king of this earth planet and forefather of the Raghu dynasty in which Lord Ramachandra appeared. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita existed in the human society from the time of Maharaj Ikshvaku. At the present moment, we have just passed through 5,000 years of the Kali Yuga, which lasts 432,000 years. Before this, there was Dwapara Yuga, 800,000 years. And before that, there was Treta Yuga, 1,200,000 years. Thus, some 2,005,000 years ago, Manu spoke the Bhagavad Gita to his disciple and son, Maharaj Ikshvaku, the king of this planet Earth. The age of the current Manu is calculated to last some 305,300,000 years, of which 120,400,000 have passed. Accepting that before the birth of Manu, the Gita was spoken by the Lord to his disciple, the sun god Vivasvan, a rough estimate is that the Gita was spoken at least 120,400,000 years ago. And in human society, it has been existent for 2 million years. It was re-spoken by the Lord again to Arjuna about 5,000 years ago. That is the rough estimate of the history of the Gita, according to the Gita itself, and according to the version of the speaker, Lord Sri Krishna. It was spoken to the sun god Vivasvan because he is also a Kshatriya and is the father of all Kshatriyas who are descendants of the sun god, or the Surya Vamsa Kshatriyas. Because Bhagavad Gita is as good as the Vedas, being spoken by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this knowledge is aparusya, superhuman. Since the Vedic instructions are accepted as they are, without human interpretation, the Gita must therefore be accepted without mundane interpretation. The mundane wranglers may speculate on the Gita in their own ways, but that is not Bhagavad Gita as it is. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita has to be accepted as it is from the disciplic succession, and it is described herein that the Lord spoke to the sun god spoke to his son Manu, and Manu spoke to his son Ikshvaku. Text 2. Ivam parampara praptam imam raja rishayo vidhu sakalene ha mahata yoga nasta parantapa. Translation. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. It is clearly stated that the Gita was especially meant for the saintly kings because they were to execute its purpose in ruling over the citizens. Certainly, Bhagavad Gita was never meant for demoniac persons who would dissipate its value for no one's benefit and would devise all types of interpretations according to personal whims. As soon as the original purpose was scattered by the motives of unscrupulous commentators, there arose the need to re-establish the disciplic succession. 5,000 years ago, it was detected by the Lord himself that the disciplic succession was broken, and therefore he declared that the purpose of the Gita appeared to be lost. In the same way, at the present moment also, there are so many editions of the Gita, especially in English, but almost all of them are not according to the authorized disciplic succession. There are innumerable interpretations rendered by different mundane scholars, but almost all of them do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, although they make a good business on the words of Sri Krishna. This spirit is demoniac because demons do not believe in God, but simply enjoy the property of the Supreme. Since there is a great need of an edition of the Gita in English, as it is received by the Parampara disciplic succession system, an attempt is made herewith to fulfill this great want. Bhagavad Gita, accepted as it is a great boon to humanity. But if it is accepted as a treatise of philosophical speculations, it is simply a waste of time. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Imam Vivasvate Jogam Proktamanaham Avyayam Vivasvan Manave Praha Manuiksvakave Bravit. The Blessed Lord said, I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god Vivasvan, and Vivasvan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshvaku. Ivam parampara praptam imam raja rishayo vidhu sakaleneha mahata yoganashta parantapaha. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in the course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. So these two verses are very important verses from Bhagavad Gita, 4th chapter, describe the process by which this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita has come into our hands. And that process is that Krishna originally spoke Bhagavad Gita at the beginning of the creation of the universe to the sun god, Vivasvan. So Vivasvan, by our calculation, is very, very old. We cannot even imagine the age of the sun god. This is an unbelievable amount of time. So you cannot imagine how long ago that was. And the sun god spoke this knowledge to his sons and his disciples. So Vivasvan heard the Bhagavad Gita from Krishna, and then Vivasvan spoke this Bhagavad Gita to his sons, Manu, the father of mankind. And in turn, Manu instructed it to Ikshvaku. So this is the history of Bhagavad Gita. Originally, Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Vivasvan, the sun god. And that was such a long time ago that we cannot even imagine. Vivasvan then spoke the Bhagavad Gita to his son, Manu, who is the father of mankind. And then in turn, Manu spoke that same Bhagavad Gita to Ikshvaku, who 2,500,000 years ago was the king of this earth planet. So we can understand then that Bhagavad Gita has been present within the human society for at least 2,500,000 years, from the time when Manu instructed it to his son Ikshvaku, who was then the king of this whole planet. Now what happened was, after some time, the knowledge became lost. The knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita became lost. Now, this is the nature of the material world. Everything we find in this material world goes through different stages. It is created, it exists for some time, it produces some byproducts, it dwindles, and then it vanishes. This is the power of time. Time is very, very powerful. And time wears away everything. So even if some a very perfect spiritual knowledge is established at some point in time, then the nature of this material world and the nature of people is that the knowledge will be lost. The knowledge will be misunderstood. The knowledge will be misrepresented by the various generations. And this knowledge of Krishna consciousness that Krishna has given in the Bhagavad Gita, it is very delicate knowledge. So the knowledge is only potent, only acts, if it is received in the pure disciplic succession. And that disciplic succession, it can be very easily broken. This means that the preachers of Bhagavad Gita have an incredibly great responsibility, because as soon as we speak, anything on supposedly on Bhagavad Gita, which is not simply knowledge that we have heard in the disciplic succession, and then we've broken the disciplic succession. The responsibility of the Bhagavatam reciter is to hear the perfect knowledge from his bona fide spiritual master and to simply repeat that knowledge to the people who he is speaking to. He has no authorization to present his own opinion or to add anything new or to subtract anything that was originally in the message, as the original message was presented by Krishna to the sun god Vivasvan, as Vivasvan presented that same message to his son Manu, and as Manu presented that same message to his son Ikshvaku, and that was 2,005,000 years ago, and that's when this Bhagavad Gita entered into the human society through this king, Maharaj Ikshvaku, who was at that time the king of the whole planet. So the actual qualification of a real spiritual master is that he simply presents perfectly the knowledge that has been given to him by his bona fide spiritual master to the people who come to hear from him. He doesn't put any of his own opinions inside. He doesn't add any new information, and he doesn't subtract anything which was there in the original message as it is distributed by Krishna. Now, although this appears to be like a very simple thing to do, a very simple process, it goes against the very nature of our conditioned life in the material world. In the conditioned state in the material world, we're thinking, actually, that I'm very important and that my ideas and my opinion is very valuable, we think, in the conditioned state of life. So this makes it impossible for somebody who is in the conditioned state of life, someone who's not a liberated soul, actually, to speak on the Bhagavad Gita. Because the problem is, one who is in the conditioned materialistic concept of life, he will be actually thinking that I am the body and that I have some very important ideas and my ideas are very valuable. And instead of simply humbly hearing the message of the Bhagavad Gita from his bona fide spiritual master and simply humbly repeating that same message, the same message that's been handed down through the disciplic succession since before the beginning of time, he will want to put his own twist on the message, give it his own spin. And as soon as we inject any of our own ideas, any of our own opinions, no matter how nice or how wonderful we think they are, into the message of the Bhagavad Gita, we've broken the disciplic succession. We've broken the parampara. And what we're speaking is no longer a representative of the disciplic succession, no longer a representative of the parampara. And the transcendental knowledge, it will not flow through us. This is a very mystical thing, the Bhagavad Gita, and the knowledge which is inside the Bhagavad Gita, and how one comes to understand the Bhagavad Gita. These are not simply words printed on paper that one can understand through scholarship, through simply by studying the words, by studying the language. Understanding of Bhagavad Gita is not possible in that way. The understanding comes because we have to hear the words from a pure devotee in the disciplic succession. Somebody who is not adding his own opinion. And actually, pure devotee is not a very difficult thing, not a very complicated thing in one sense. It simply means somebody who follows the principles which are set out in the Bhagavad Gita. And the pure devotee is very humble, and he thinks, my opinion is worthless, my knowledge is worthless, I'm nothing, I am simply, all I can do is I have heard this knowledge from my spiritual master, and I'm simply going to deliver it to the audience. I'm going to whoever I meet, then I will simply speak the same thing that I've heard from Srila Prabhupada. I will repeat that same thing to whomever I meet. And in that way, because I'm simply repeating the message, then the message will be powerful. It is the message that's powerful. It is not us that are powerful. So we have to become simply carriers of the message. Srila Prabhupada would give often a very nice example in this regard. He would speak in India, and everywhere there is a postman. And the responsibility of the postman is that he will take the letter, and the letter has some person's address on that letter, and he will simply take that letter and deliver it to that person's address. And then he has performed his duty very nicely. Now, the postman may not be a very qualified person, and the letter may contain some very, very valuable thing. So he may not be very wealthy, the postman. Postman may be a poor man, for example. But the letter or the parcel, it may contain some very, very valuable thing. So the parcel may contain a beautiful diamond ring worth millions of dollars. And the postman, he is a poor man, so but he can take his responsibility, his duty, is to simply take that parcel and deliver it to the person whose address is written on the parcel. And if he does that, then the person gets that million-dollar diamond, and the person gets the value. So even though the postman himself is not a millionaire, he's not very valuable, he simply accepts that this is my duty. My duty is to take this parcel and deliver it to the person whose name is written on the parcel. And he delivers the million-dollar diamond. So similarly, the business of the spiritual master is like that. The business of the spiritual master is that he takes the message as that had been given to him by his bona fide spiritual master. And whoever comes to him, he simply delivers them that same message. And actually anybody can do this. It requires humility, and it requires submission, and it requires surrender. And it is a very simple thing, actually. But we have to come to this point of surrender and humility, and this point of actually realizing that my mental speculation, my intellect, my knowledge, my everything about my ideas, they're all useless. They're all faulty. Everything, and this is a very difficult thing to come to realize, because we're so attached to our mental speculation, the whole process, this whole world, the scientific method, they call it, is built on this system of mental speculation. And the whole idea, which is basically underlying the world that we live in this material world, is that by this process of mental speculation, then we can advance the knowledge of mankind, and that we can create a better world, and we can advance. This is the whole background of the world, the material world. But it's false. If you carefully study the results of all of this mental speculation and scientific advancement that we see in the world, you'll find that people are not any more happy now than they were 1,000 years ago or 100 years ago. In fact, the people are much more distressed now and full of anxieties, which they were not full of 100 years ago. And the world has become a very dangerous place. Everywhere, all over the world at the present time, we're seeing there are big, big wars going on. There's violence everywhere. There's terrorism. You cannot walk on the street. If you go outside your house, there is always the real, very real fear that there may be some criminal out there, some person who will attack you, steal your money, kill you. So many violent activities are going on. And people are simply afraid, and they're always full of anxiety. So what's happened, we have been all of these big, big scientists and philosophers have been speculating about and coming up with so many ideas, and they're thinking that these ideas will help the people to become happy, will help the people to become, the society to become better organized like that. So what is the result of all of this mental speculation? The result is that the people are more unhappy, more distressed, more anxious than they have ever been in any point in the history of the human race. So bringing this back to the disciplic succession, the reason I'm giving this example of the results of the modern scientific and philosophical mental speculation is I'm trying to make the point that even though we are those people, the scientists and the philosophers who have come up with the technology and the philosophy which underpins the way the world is, the current materialistic world is running, they were very sincerely working and they were actually thinking that my ideas and my scientific advancements will help the people to become happy. And my philosophical ideas or my political ideas will create a political system in which people will be very happy. So, they were sincerely trying for very noble goals from the materialistic point of view. But the result has been the opposite. The result has been very bad. Instead of creating happiness for the people, they've created great distress and great misery. But they didn't intend to do that. They intended to make the world a better place. So what can happen is that because naturally we have been trained in this way since birth in mental speculation and trained to think that there is some value in our ideas and there is some value in our opinion and that we actually have some capacity, with our own strength, with our own mind, to come up with these brilliant ideas. So this whole concept, if we are going to become Krishna conscious, or if we're going to become able to present this knowledge to others, if we're going to become empowered by Krishna to preach, we have to completely give up this mental speculation. We have to completely give up the idea, the conception that I can do anything valuable on my own strength. We cannot come up with any valuable ideas ourselves. We cannot come up with anything worthwhile with our intelligence, with our nothing. The only valuable thing that we can do, the only worthwhile thing that we can present, is first we must hear. We must hear from the bona fide spiritual master in the disciplic succession. We must hear from Srila Prabhupada. And we have to accept what he's preaching and follow it in our life. And then repeat it to others, simply present the same message. And that will be powerful. So this disciplic succession is such an essential point. And it's so easy for the disciplic succession to become broken. We see throughout the history that the disciplic succession is always being broken. You see, in the beginning of time, Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to the sun god, Vivasvan. Vivasvan instructed it to his son, Manu, who is the original person. Manu instructed to his son, Ikshvaku. And Ikshvaku, he was the king of the earth planet 2,005,000 years ago. So, after some time, this knowledge was being passed down through the saintly kings. So, Maharaj Ikshvaku, he would teach the Bhagavad Gita to his sons, who in turn became kings, and they would teach the same Bhagavad Gita to their sons. But after some time, even though the Bhagavad Gita was still there and people were still preaching on the Bhagavad Gita, the actual knowledge, the actual essence of the message of the Bhagavad Gita became lost. So at the point of 5,000 years ago, Krishna, he could detect that the Bhagavad Gita message had become completely lost, and that it was necessary for him to appear again in the form of Krishna and speak the Bhagavad Gita to his friend and disciple Arjuna. So this is actually the purpose, the reason that Krishna appeared within the material world. There's another verse in the Bhagavad Gita which describes the reason for Krishna's appearance. Yadha yadha hi dhamasya glani bhavati bharata abhutanama dhamasya taratmanam sri jamiyaham. This means that time and time again I appear within this material world, and my purpose is to yadha yadha hi dhamasya paritranaya saranam. My purpose is to protect the sadhus and vinashaya cha duskritam, to destroy the demons. And then the next verse, Krishna says, Ivam param praprapam imam rajarisho vidhu saklena mahata yoganashta prantapaha. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. So this is it. This is why Krishna appears. He appears because that knowledge which was spoken by Krishna originally and passed down through the saintly kings had become lost. So there's a necessity. Periodically, there is a necessity in human society for Krishna to come himself as an incarnation, or Krishna to send his empowered representative, his pure devotees, to re-establish the principles of religion in the material world. Because as we have been saying, that after some time, even though the pure religious principles are established, they will be lost due to the course of time. So this happened again. It happens again and again and again. It happened before the advent of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in West Bengal in India. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself personally. And he also, at that time, 500 years ago, the message of the Bhagavad Gita, the parampara had been lost. The knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita had been lost. So Krishna again appeared in the form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he taught the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, the teachings of Krishna, in the mood of a devotee of Krishna. So the teachings of Lord Chaitanya and the teachings of Krishna are the same, because Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, the same Krishna. So even it did not take very long after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu re-established the pure parampara, the disciplic succession, and the Bhagavad Gita was again, the knowledge was again correctly being understood. Not so long after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left this planet, some of his disciples also deviated from the teachings, his pure teachings, and schisms developed. And there were different groups of followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who started to have different opinions. And actually, there is no different opinion in spiritual life. There is only one opinion, and that's the opinion of Krishna. So as soon as you see there are devotees with different opinions, you can understand either one of them or both of them have broken the parampara, lost the parampara, because there can be no different opinion, actually, in the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. It is one, Krishna's opinion only. So we have to find the pure representative of Krishna, who can actually, he's actually empowered to present Krishna's opinion. And this is valuable. Krishna's opinion is very valuable, but our opinion or anybody else's opinion is completely useless. And this is really the key. This is the beginning of spiritual life. If we can understand this point and actually realize this point, that Krishna's opinion is valuable and everybody else's opinion is completely useless, worthless. This is the beginning. We have to give up this idea that my opinion has some value. So this knowledge we see with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even few years after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left our material vision, his disciples started quarreling, and their different factions of disciples appeared presenting different opinions. So by the time of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his preaching is in the late 1800s, early 1900s. So the beginning, like 1896, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he sent his book, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, His Life and Precepts, all over the world to different universities. So it was found by one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples in the McGill University in Canada. So we can see from this that even in 1896, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had this vision to present, preach Krishna consciousness all over the world. But the point of Bhaktivinoda Thakur is that at his time, in the late 1800s, the whole message of Vaishnavism was completely lost. The whole message of Bhagavad Gita was completely lost. Krishna, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he appeared in 1486. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu established the pure knowledge of Bhagavad Gita in, say, 1500, you can say. 1486, 1496, say 1506, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would have been 20 years old. So, of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't age like we age, but from our materialistic conception, he would have been present for 20 years in 1506. So at that time, 1506, everything was, he was preaching. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was full on preaching Krishna consciousness, although it's flooding India, the subcontinent of India, with his message of love of God. And the clear understanding of Bhagavad Gita was there. But from that point, 1506, to the time when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was there preaching, which has to be around the late 1800s. So we are talking maybe 450 years, you could say, afterwards. There was no hint of the pure teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or the pure teachings of Krishna, and the message of the Bhagavad Gita had been completely lost. The disciplic succession, the parampara, was completely broken. So the way the parampara was re-established was through Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he studied the books of the acharyas, the Vaishnava acharyas, particularly the direct disciples of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Goswamis of Vrindavan. So the books of Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, and Jiva Goswami particularly. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur studied these books, and from these literatures of the previous acharyas, he was able to re-establish the pure teachings of Lord Chaitanya and the pure teachings of Krishna, and therefore the pure teachings of the Vaishnava. Vaishnavas. So at this time, at the end of the 1896, by the time 1896, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's preaching was going on. His preaching was not so big, in a sense that mostly he was living in Jagannath Puri, and he was the magistrate in Jagannath Puri, and he was in charge of the temple, Jagannath Temple. He wasn't preaching very widely all over India, even all over the world, but he had the idea. His dream was that this message of Lord Chaitanya would be spread all over the world. And so he prayed to Lord Vishnu for a son who would be a ray of Vishnu, who would be empowered to actually preach this message of Krishna consciousness, the pure message of the Bhagavad Gita in the real parampara all over the world. So he had a son, and his son was actually Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur took on this great mission of very powerfully preaching the pure message of the Bhagavad Gita all over India. And he was always requesting his disciples that any disciple, he would say, he was a little intelligent, if he knew the English language, he would instruct him that you should take this Krishna consciousness very seriously, and you should preach this message of Lord Chaitanya in the Western countries in English. So Srila Prabhupada was one of many, many disciples whom Srila Bhaktisiddhanta gave this instruction to. But Srila Prabhupada was the one disciple who actually took it very seriously and made that the mission of his life. So we see, because Srila Prabhupada actually made the order of his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the mission of his life, and he worked very hard to actually establish the Krishna consciousness, pure philosophy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Western countries. And so he was very successful, and he became, his success, Prabhupada's success, was that he simply repeating the message that he has received from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his bona fide spiritual master, in the disciplic succession. So the success of Srila Prabhupada's preaching is actually a testament to the power of the parampara, the power of the disciplic succession. So we can also become empowered to preach, but only if we actually realize that my opinion, my ideas, my intellect has no value. The only value is Krishna's opinion, Krishna's idea. So we must get Krishna's opinion and Krishna's ideas through the bona fide, the pure devotee, the disciplic succession, the parampara. And we have to humbly simply present that, like the postman who simply takes the parcel and he delivers it to the person whose name is on the address. This is his duty. So we simply have to hear the pure messages which are coming from Krishna through the disciplic succession, through the parampara, and repeat them to everybody we meet. This way, through the power of the parampara, we will become an instrument in the hands of Krishna. If you have any question or any comments that you would like to make on this class, you please post them on www.krishna.org. I'm reading all of the comments on the krishna.org website, and I will reply also personally to your question. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy.